Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for that introduction, Ryan. Again, I'm Andrew Adams. I'm a PhD student from Mississippi State University under the advisement of Dr. Jeff Gore and Dr. Angus Ketchot. Brief introduction, bollworm, Helicoverpa zea, beet armyworm, Spidoptera exigua, and fall armyworm, Spidoptera frugiperda, are widely distributed polyphagous pests of numerous crops in the Mid-South, mainly corn, cotton, soybeans, and grain sorghum. Bollworm is something that is dealt with year in and year out. Beet armyworm and fall armyworms, they are, they are severe pests, but mainly occasional pests, especially with the introduction of BT technologies. Historically, foliar application of insecticides targeting the boll weevil and the tobacco budworm has led to resistance or inconsistent control with multiple chemical classes such as chlorinated hydrocarbons, organophosphates, carbamates, pyrethroids, and benzoyl phenureas. And recently, a new class of insecticides has been introduced, the diamide chemistry, or the diamide class. And in this class, the main ones that we use are belt fluvandiamide and prevothion and chlorotrienolipril. These insecticides act on insect ranidine receptors, which control the release of intracellular calcium stores in the muscle. And characteristics of this insecticide class are they have high levels of acute toxicity followed by a long residual life. And in cotton production, we see a yield increase when we use these diamides in non-BT and also in our Bollguard 2 and wide strike varieties, especially when we're under heavy pressure. These really come in and fill the gap that the BT technology has left. And they're characterized by having long residual efficacy. A lot of chemical companies are pushing that we use these insecticides before insect pressure arises or right when insect pressure is about to hit, and we see that we have extremely long residual efficacy with these diamides. And that's also, it can be a very good thing and from a production standpoint, but it can also be a very bad thing from a selection or from a resistance issue, because we have multiple generations of insects being selected after one application of a foliar insecticide. So a little justification of research, we want to understand the impact of this selection pressure that it will have on the development of resistance. And once we understand selection pressure, we'd like to develop an understanding of the mechanisms of resistance to this class of chemistry. So that way we can evaluate the risk of insecticide resistance and try to predict the control levels if or when resistance occurs. And also, because this is such an effective class of chemistry, we would like to develop a resistance management plan in order to prolong this from happening or occurring. But in order to do this, we need to develop concentration mortality bioassays and establish baseline susceptibility levels so that way we know when resistance begins to arise. So previous research has been conducted to determine the concentration mortality relationship between Lepidopterous pests and the diamide insecticides. However, the criteria that was used in these studies was similar to that used for insecticides that affect the nervous system, whereas when you flip a larvae on its dorsal side and try to flip it over and it failure to right itself would be considered dead. However, after running several bioassays, if you notice the picture on the left shows a non-treated beet armyworm. However, the picture on the right is a beet armyworm after 7 days after exposure, how it has not developed. However, it maintains full coordinated movement. So therefore, we question, was the criterion of failure to flip itself or failure to right itself after being flipped on its dorsal surface, is that the best way to measure mortality? So we decided to look at more of weight, something similar to what Greenplate did back in the early BT technologies or BT papers, where we looked at size in order to determine mortality. So our objective of the study was to develop concentration mortality bioassays so that way we can establish baseline susceptibility levels. And with this concentration mortality bioassay, we need several things. One, we need low control mortality, ease of rating so that way anybody can rate this and we still get similar results from person to person, repeatability across areas and regions of the U.S., and then relevance to field control. As I said earlier, we're being pushed to apply this insecticide early and prior to insect pressure, right before insect pressure, and we have long residual control. So what we're seeing is a lot of pressure coming on neonate larvae or first instar larvae. So these bioassays, they were conducted on insecticide-susceptible laboratory strains and colonies that were collected from field populations of Helicoverpa zea, Spidoptera exigua, and Spidoptera fruticiperta. These were conducted in the summer of 2013 at the Delta Research and Extension Center in Stoneville, Mississippi. All larvae were fed a meridic diet from Ward's Natural Science. This diet was prepared according to manufacturer's recommendations, and colonies were kept 14-10 light-dark cycle, 23.9 to 29.4 degrees Celsius at 80% relative humidity. Commercial belt was used for commercial belt was combined with sterile water or distilled water to create a 1 part per million stock solution. The insecticide solution was then mixed with the meridic diet to yield 128 grams of diet on a rate range of 0 to 0.125 parts per million. The diet was refrigerated when not in use, and it was used within 7 days of preparation. All bioassays that were conducted on field populations we used within 2 generations on neonate larvae, and all other ones were used, within 12 hours of hatching. We used 128-well bioassay trays with 16 larvae per treatment, and each replication was based off of egg lay. One neonate larvae was placed in a well with the insecticide-treated diet, and then each well was labeled according to dose and location. So again, we looked at larval weight to determine mortality, or larval size, and weight was the best measurement of this size. So insect mortality was evaluated 7 days after exposure. Weight was recorded for each individual larvae, and then the larvae was deemed dead from 1 to 10 milligrams. So at 1 milligram, anything less than 1 milligram was deemed dead, 2 dead, 3 dead, so forth and so on to 10, in order to figure out which weight was the best one to go by. So all data was then analyzed using probit analysis and PROC probit SAS version 9.3. Fiducial limits that did not overlap were considered significant, and control mortality was corrected using Abbott's formula. So our data analysis for flubendiamide, what we're going to show is 2 Helicoverpa zea colonies, 2 Spidoptera exigua colonies, and 3 Spidoptera fruticiperta colonies. And by using larval weight, we determined that the best fit was 10 milligrams for zea and exigua and 8 milligrams for fruticiperta. On our y-axis, we have our parts per million. On our x-axis, we have our colony information with the fiducial limits located at the top of the bar graph. For zea, the LC50 ranged from 0.016 to 0.024, and the LC90 ranged from 0.021 to 0.033. For the Spidoptera exigua colonies, again, this is set up the same way as the previous graph. Our LC50s range from 0.012 to 0.017, and our LC90s range from 0.017 to 0.022. And again, this graph is set up the same way. With our fruticiperta colonies, the LC50s range from 0.032 to 0.042, where our LC90s range from 0.045 to 0.056. So in conclusion of our flubendiamide study, that larval weight is going to be appropriate for determining mortality. It is more applicable than failure to right itself because of the way that the insecticide works on the insect. This information is going to be used in reference for future resistance monitoring and resistance monitoring efforts. We did run bioassays with chlorchinellaprol. However, the slopes for the concentration mortality curves are a lot steeper than that for flubendiamide. We're dealing basically with parts per billion. And right now we're currently working on to accurately define the range of doses. And our future work is to take this information and artificially select for resistance to diamides in the laboratories, and we're going to do this. We've actually already started this work, mainly with beets and flubendiamide, and we're trying to select at an LC30, LC60, and LC90 to see which one could possibly select for, figure out which one selects for quicker. And then we want to try to correlate this field control with the diamides against resistance and susceptible populations. With that, I'd like to thank Rebecca Toten for all her help in the lab, my faculty advisors, Dr. Jeff Gore and Angus Ketchot, and all my fellow graduate students. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Got time for questions? Thank you, Andrew.